Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 3rd of March 2019. We're recording this first podcast on a Sunday night as we get ready for our work week. I hope you enjoyed your weekend up to this point. Getting ready for a Monday. This podcast, of course, will be streaming live on my YouTube channel. Shout out to all the people who have subscribed to my channel. We're just, you know, we're doing some numbers. We're picking up the numbers here, you know, closer. Last check, I think it was at 1250. So I appreciate all the support and all the love that you've given me as far as subscribing to my channel. Again, Real Deal Podcast. You can look it up on my YouTube channel. Also, about 15-20 minutes after this broadcast, this podcast is over, it will be available via YouTube and will be available on Blog Talk Radio as well. Somewhere probably, I want to say, around the 11, you know, probably after midnight. I might try to squeeze it before tonight, but definitely by tomorrow, this podcast will be available through Blog Talk Radio. So, yeah, plenty of ways to get to me, to get to the podcast: iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, Blog Talk Radio. So it's no excuse not to be able to hear hear me to Real Zero Quinn on the Real Deal Podcast. Begin the podcast. I want to talk about collaborations, and I think that in our lives, because I was out last night with some close friends celebrating a birthday, got a chance to kick it, just talk about life, you know, a good 4.5 to 5 hours of conversation, you know, had some fun, chance to, again, some real two close friends of mine, in terms of Chad Quinn, Robert Sapp, and, you know, always good to see those guys, all of us together. It's rare that we're all together in the same place these days with our schedule being so busy. But, you know, you cherish the times that you are with such close friends. I can't get over right now. I just got to stop. I'm about to stop the podcast. This is what happens when you do a podcast, when you're looking at yourself as you're doing the podcast. It's one of the drawbacks. Just the mustaches. I don't know what's going on with this. Yeah, part of it's going up, but I'm just gonna try and make it through. I'm gonna try to do my best. I'm noticing this part of my mustache that's up, that's going up when the mustache is supposed to be laying flat. So I got a mustache hair out of place right now. So bear with me. This is the drawback of doing a podcast when you're looking at yourself talk live on the podcast. But I'll try to get through it. But got a chance to talk to a couple, you know, talking to Robert Sapp, Chad Quinn. And I can only give you about 5% of what we talked about. A lot of stuff is personal. A lot of stuff is just not for podcasting. And I apologize for that, because I believe in transparency. I believe in telling you the truth and being open and honest with you on this. You know, it's real deal podcast. But I can give you about 5% of stuff. But the 5% stuff should be some, you know, would be some jewels. And, you know, we're talking, just got into a conversation about collaborations and what it looks like when you align yourself and surround yourself with other talented people who, you know, not necessarily agree with you, or they necessarily may be the polar opposite of you. And I just, you know, and all throughout the course of this day, I just finished watching The Shop, of course, produced by Maverick Carter and LeBron James, and minus Antonio Brown. It was a great episode. I think their best episode to date, to be honest with you. And just the collaborations of those different personalities and LeBron talked about how he made it to this point, and he said something like to the effect of, he thinks that there basically was an Amber Alert to everybody out there, knowing in his hometown who knew that this dude couldn't fail. That's how much support he had. Talks about his friends, who've made it, and the ones who did not make it, unfortunately, through the streets and through, you know, violence and what have you. And, you know, basically feeling blessed and highly, you know, it messes with his head, basically. Mess with his head, considering that he thinks that he could have been on the other side. But, you know, that support system, those collaborations of relationships that you cultivate over the course of time are just vital to any type of success that you want to have. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a person who does not want to wait on anyone, doesn't want to be dependent on anyone for shit, to be honest with you. I'm as independent as it gets. And there have been times over the course of my life that, you know, has probably in some ways held me back at times. So that's one of the things that, you know, I'm working on being more of a collaborator. I'm working on being more of somebody who wants to put together a team, says, you know what, because no one's an expert on everything. No one. There's always somebody out there that knows more than you in a particular subject or a particular aspect of your life. So just surround yourself with dope people. Surround yourself with dope people. It's a lot of talent out there. It's a lot of talent out there beyond friendships. I'm talking about people in general who you might not be friends with. So, we talked about the importance of collaborations. And also, we had a very interesting conversation about anger and the thought that, now I disagree with, about the purity of anger. How pure is anger? Now, I think that anger is a pure form of emotion, is a pure emotion. I'm not gonna say it's the purest emotion that you can have, but I think it's a pure emotion. My friends, in particular Chad Quinn, did not agree with that take. But I thought that, now again, it's not good to be angry. Like if you find yourself being angry, that's, you know, if you're angry for an extended period of time, then you need to talk to somebody. You need to turn to somebody. But I do feel like it's a pure emotion that we all experience, you know, that we all experience. And I think it's a natural emotion to get angry at times. But, you know, how long you are angry, that's a whole nother story. Great point that Rob Sapp made about anger, that it does need to be stripped down. Like, why are you angry? If you are angry, why? What's behind it? He mentioned a lot of times it's fear, which is the truth, which is definitely true. So, again, great times to spend with those guys. As you can hear, I kind of lost my voice last night, fighting a chess code and also just yelling, trying to get my point across as usual. And when we all three of us get together, but certainly it was a great time to spend with those guys. You always cherish those moments that you get to spend with friends or family. A couple of birthday shout outs. Happy birthday to Courtney, my cousin Courtney Quinn Gibson. I'm not gonna mess with her, sell her age. She's older than me, I'll say that. I'm sure she'll be thrilled about me saying that. But again, she's just somebody who I have as much respect for any particular outside my mother, has as much respect for any person walking the face of the earth. She's just a brilliant young woman and who has just done wonderful things in her life. So happy birthday to her. Happy belated to my guy, Arnold Manott, down there enjoying the Yankees spring training. So shout out to him. He's younger than me, so I'll give him that. But he celebrated his birthday yesterday, and again, amazing. And shout out to him and his beautiful wife who celebrated their 10th anniversary recently. How, you know, time goes by. Remember the wedding. So time is moving, people. You got to get stuff done. Time waits for no man. You got to get shit done. If you're trying to do something, do it. Don't wait for anybody or anything to get you to accomplish what you have in mind, goals, and things that you want to do in your life. This is going to be a terrible segue, but I'm going to do it anyway. The Larry Beyer assault. Of course, anybody doesn't know about this. Larry Beyer is the CEO of the San Francisco Giants. He has been since 2012. The Giants have won two championships under his leadership. Not the owner, but CEO, so a big, you know, a big position in that franchise, which has been one of the top franchises in baseball, though they have struggled in the last couple of years. But basically, TMZ had this video. Basically, it seemed like as soon as it happened, where he was physically struggling with his wife, and she ended up on the ground. Apparently, it was over, from what they both say, I don't necessarily believe this, but over a family member, argument over a family member, and it resulted in a struggle over a cell phone. I'm going to be honest with you, it looked like he got sent a pic by a mistress, and his wife tried it, and his wife caught him. She tried to take the cell phone. Think about the story, right? You get into it now. Anybody that's been in a relationship or been with someone, public fights are not uncommon. Like we see people getting into arguments, couples getting into arguments publicly without turning physical, verbal. That happens. That's not unusual. But the odds on a family member getting into an argument on a family member and that results into a struggle over a cell phone, I just don't buy it at all. Somebody, either a pic or a text from his side piece, got caught. Wife wanted to see the phone, refused to give up the phone, and there you go. Resulted in him basically, I'm not saying he didn't push her, but he physically, you know, he's a man, she's a woman. He, you know, it resulted in her ending up on the ground. And do I characterize this as the worst form of domestic violence that we've ever seen? No, but it is domestic violence. You physically handled your wife, and she ended up on the ground. So it is a form of domestic violence, though not in the category of Ray Rice, or Kareem Hunt. But it'll be very interesting to see what baseball does. They have to do something as far as, it violating their personal conduct code. Again, it's no excuse for it. You don't put hands on a woman in any situation unless you're trying to restrain. The only time I would even, accept a man putting his hands on a woman if he was trying to physically restrain them. Like, if your woman's trying to hit you, you physically restrain them from hitting you, that's a totally different situation. But other than that, there's no excuse to put any hands on a woman, let alone struggling over a cell phone. So I can see baseball has to do something. They can't turn a blind eye to this, especially, you know, it being about 3.5 weeks or so away from opening day. I think opening night is March 28th. Is, you know, something that they don't want. But yeah, the mustache is what it is. Mustache is not going to go down. It's just going to stay there and, you know, live its best life. So it's going to stay up, I guess. So, or this part of the mustache. But baseball has to do something. I don't know. A suspension. This is unlike a player. I mean, if you punish players, you got to hold, you know, executives to even a higher standard. This guy has to be in his late 50s, early 60s. So, you know, again, there's no excuse for it whatsoever. Definitely an embarrassment to the franchise, a proud franchise that is the San Francisco Giants. And something that, I just don't understand it, how comfortable it's gotten to a point in society, how comfortable men are in terms of how they physically handle women. I don't get it. I will never understand it. I don't care about it's just circumstances that, 9.5 times out of 10, that's just inexcusable. So Larry Beyer could be looking at a long suspension. I could see baseball making a major statement as far as we're not going to, you know, we're not going to tolerate this whatsoever. Again, players, certainly Players Association will be putting pressure on baseball, because if you punish one of us, you got to be willing, you got to be able to come down with the hammer on one of, on the executive of the team. So we'll see what happens with that. As far as the NBA was a busy weekend with the NBA, a busy week in the NBA, but in particular the last couple of days. The Lakers are finished in terms of making the playoffs. They're not going to make the playoffs. They had one of the worst loss, the worst loss of the season, probably to the worst team in the NBA in Phoenix Suns. And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't see how Phoenix has too much talent to be as bad as they are. I'm looking at this, you know, DeAndre Ayton. We know he doesn't play any defense, but he's an excellent offensive player. Booker has all-star talent. I think Phoenix, I can't figure out for the life of me how Phoenix isn't. Now, we know they're a poorly run organization, but from a talent standpoint, that they are bad to me, badly underachieving from a talent standpoint. I think Phoenix could be easily a 30 win team, to be honest with you. But we know how poorly their organization is ran. It has been run, you know, post Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, post that era, that 2010 year when they made it to the Western Conference Finals and lost to, of course, to the Lakers back in 2010. So prior after that, it's been a dumpster fire as far as their franchise and how they've been run. But the Lakers are absolutely finished. And if you're the Lakers right now, you have to start thinking about what the offseason is going to, I'm sure you have to think about the offseason, what the offseason is going to look like. And you have to start thinking about life after LeBron James. LeBron James is going to continue to rack up numbers. I think that LeBron James will, he may not publicly say this, but he wants to be all time leading scorer in NBA history. I'm sure he's chasing Kareem's record. So he's going to continue to put up numbers, but you can't have a LeBron James on this team unless you land Anthony Davis or Kawhi Leonard or some other major star, Kyrie Irving. If they can't land a major all-star / superstar come the summer, then it makes zero sense to me to bring LeBron James back for year number two. Considering the age, and I think that his trade value would be at its peak as a Laker this summer. His trade value won't be any higher, considering it will only lessen as time goes on. So I think that unless they can land Anthony Davis, a Kawhi Leonard, a Kyrie Irving, that they better have a post LeBron plan in place moving forward, because they this team now, the good, they have a couple of things going for them moving forward into the summer. Number one, Brandon Ingram's value is going up, it's going to skyrocket if he keeps playing like this for the rest of the season. Brandon Ingram, since the All-Star break, has been an All-Star. Cal has played at an All-Star level. He's been tremendous on both ends of the floor, especially offensively. He does not defer to LeBron whatsoever. And I remember there was a time about the Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzman comparison. There's no comparison between those two players. Kuzman, you can make it, is probably a better pure shooter. I'll give him that. But as far as all-around player, putting the ball on the floor, creating for others, it's not even close. Like, it's really not even close. And again, I always thought Ingram was a better player than Kuzman anyway, because it's just all-around playmaking and what he can and his ability to guard multiple players, guard multiple positions defensively. When Kuzma doesn't guard anybody, All-Star Ingram was a better player, but now it's just not even a question. Ingram has been the one bright spot in what has been a rough post All-Star break for the Lakers. The Milwaukee loss was expected. We know the Lakers have had trouble finishing teams in the fourth quarter, finishing games. That was not to be that. That was no surprise whatsoever that the Milwaukee were in the game on a 15-2 run and without even a Greek Freak explosion. But this Phoenix loss was just like really. Not only losing to Phoenix, but not the game really wasn't even close. It wasn't close as the score indicated. Like, Phoenix controlled that game from start to finish. They was up by as many as 19 points. They were up double digits the majority of the game. They looked like they were clearly a better team than the Lakers. So that was a you know, season over, it's a wrap type of defeat. And the body language for the Lakers, even LeBron's post-game comments were kind of like a defeatist. I mean, he tried to keep a positive attitude, but it was even his body language is kind of like, man, like, damn, I'm really not going to make the playoffs for the first time since my second year in the league. I'm really not going to make that. It was kind of like, you know, he didn't say, wasn't throwing anybody under the bus. He tried to keep a positive front. You know, he tried his hardest to stay upbeat, but you could just tell, you know, just looking at him physically, looking at him out, looking, you know, his voice tone, his body language, that it was like, you know what, I'm not making the playoffs. We're not going to make the playoffs this year. So if you're the Lakers, Brandon Ingram, and the fact that you will probably have a lottery pick and a minuscule. You have a minuscule chance at landing Zion Williamson. Those are the positives of not making the playoffs. Ingram's value going up, a possible lottery pick to throw into the Anthony Davis to try to trade for Anthony Davis. So that, you know, those are a couple things that they have going for them if they don't make the playoffs. But again, if you're a Laker fan like myself, you want to see them in the playoffs. You want to see these players, you want to see these players perform on the biggest stage or with the bright lights. You want to see them get those reps in, those postseason reps in. But it looks like it's not going to happen this year. The schedule is brutal. They have a number of games against top competition, not only in the Western Conference, but they still have a East Coast trip. That, you know, they have Toronto. I believe they have. I know they have Milwaukee again as well. I think they have. I know for sure they have Milwaukee again. So that, you know, they have Boston. They have Boston on Saturday night. Next Saturday night. So the schedule is brutal. They're not going to make the playoffs. It is time, you know, for their organization to really, really think the LeBron thing through. And prepare for the worst, like we actually might have to trade him in the offseason. Houston, Boston, two teams that are going in clearly different directions, polar opposite directions. Houston is, to me, is going to be the biggest challenger to the Golden State Warriors without question, even over Oklahoma City. I say that because Houston has the experience of taking Golden State to seven games. They don't fear Golden State whatsoever. It seems to me, and this is probably the best game they've played in a long time, where you got a combination of James Harden dominance with Chris Paul's leadership and ball movement. And they, you know, again, they played a great game against Boston. I know Boston's struggling, but still, Boston's still a pretty good team at home. 21 three-pointers. Harden goes for 42. Yeah, Eric Gordon had a big game. Chris Paul continues to play great. Since he got back from injury, again, they have a lot of role players, a lot of veteran guys on that team. And to me, I think it's clear that they are the second team in the Western Conference. They are the second best team in the Western Conference, and the only team that has a remote chance at challenging Golden State. I'm not buying into Oklahoma City as a legitimate challenger to Golden State. No, I think Golden State still is a prohibited favorite because they had a nice, and Golden State had a great win Saturday night too, even, you know, without Klay Thompson against Philadelphia. That was a great game. A great game. Get some good back and forth action. Ben Simmons had a big game. You saw Durant get hot late, but Houston's the real deal right now, and I think that they're basically completely healthy. Again, you have it seems to me, and I over the course of the last couple of games, that Paul and Harden are now on the same page, which again is scary for the West, for the rest of the Western Conference. Chris Paul looks about 85% to where he was as a top point guard. He's about 85 to 90% of what he was. Now again, defensively, he's not what he once was, but offensively, he's close to where you know what we're used to seeing as far as you know. Chris Paul, all NBA caliber, all star caliber. Chris Paul, he's almost about again 85-90% of that. And right now, Houston is a legitimate threat to Golden State Warriors. As far as Boston goes, I understand that Kyrie's taking a lot of heat. I've given Kyrie a lot of heat on this program, on this podcast, numerous times over the last couple of weeks. But let's not absolve Brad Stevens from the recent, struggles of the Boston of Boston for this, not only recently but throughout the course of the season. Brad Stevens was put on this pedestal unfairly as the top coach in the league, as the smartest coach in the league, and so on and so on. I watched Brad Stevens in Butler. I recognize that Brad Stevens is a legit top coach in this league, top five, top three, top five coach in this league. Not Greg Popovich, but nobody's Popovich. For that matter, but Brad Stevens has done a terrible job with this team this year. Let's be honest. I don't want to hear an excuse of having too much talent. I want to hear excuses of the pieces don't fit. The bottom line is you had a team that last year was within a game of going to the NBA Finals. You add two guys who are in their prime, who are all stars, and the team. And now let's say, listen, Hayward. We know Hayward is not anywhere close to where he was at, fine. But Kyrie Irving has came back this year. Kyrie Irving has played at an all-star, was an all-star this year, and has played, frankly, at an all-NBA caliber level. Let's be honest, despite all the nonsense with the media and despite all how much talking he's done. On the floor, Kyrie has produced at a very high level. So to me, I'm looking at Brad Stevens and saying, what can you not figure out with rotations? Why, where's the buy-in? And that's the definition of great leadership, is buy-in. Getting people around you to buy into what you're saying or what you're doing. And right now, I see the Celtics win games. They win games because of their talent. Or they win games because the other team, they're playing against bad teams. They're even losing to bad teams. They lost to the Bulls about a week and a half ago by double digits. I know the Bulls have been playing better of late, but they're still the Bulls. But to me, I don't see the buy-in from the Celtics, not only on Kyrie as a leader, but on Brad Stevens as a coach. So it's unfair to blame this all on Kyrie. I understand he's the best player on the team. He's supposed to be the leader on that team, but Brad Stevens was deemed the anointed one as far as coaches. I mean, there were people talking like he was more valuable than an all-star, which was an all-star player. Like that question was a legitimate question. Would you rather have an all-star player or Brad Stevens as a coach? Which is a stupid. You're always going to take the player. To me, it's easy to find. Like NBA coaches aren't worth to me. I don't value NBA coaches like I do NFL coaches, and be honest with you. So I'd rather have a franchise. If I'm building a team, I'm taking a franchise player before I'm taking a great coach. But Brad Stevens was put on this pedestal, put on this level. He's done an awful job with that team. I still think he's a top coach, but the Celtics problems are real. The Celtics could have some offseason issues in themselves. I don't think Anthony Davis is coming there without Kyrie Irving resigning. I don't think Kyrie Irving is going to be a Celtic next year. So there's a distinct possibility that you could have a Kyrie Irving LeBron James reunion. That's real, and that's not a pipe dream. That's not a pipe dream whatsoever. So, Kyrie has a lot of will have a lot of options. There are a number of teams with cap space. You have Brooklyn, you have the Knicks, you're gonna have the Lakers. So I just don't see Kyrie coming back to Boston next year. I think that ship has sailed. I think Boston is looking like a team that can go out in the first round. I don't believe that Boston has this switch that they can just turn on and say, okay, it's playoff time. The regular season is boring. Now let's get down to business. I don't believe they have that switch. I believe that in order to have that switch, you have to have some championship pedigree. They don't have championship pedigree on there as a team, as a unit. Kyrie has a championship, but as a unit, as a team, they don't have championship pedigree. So I don't believe that they all of a sudden they're gonna be able to turn on this switch and just say, you know what, it's playoff time. We're going to the finals. I don't see it. Right now, I'm looking at the Eastern Conference. It's a two-horse race as far as I'm concerned. As far as I'm concerned, you have Milwaukee and Toronto. I would give slight edge, and I mean the slightest of edge to Toronto. And that's hard for me to do because I respect Milwaukee. I was very impressed with Milwaukee Friday night with how with I think we underrate how good their role players are. Like Brogdon, those guys are Brogdon's a very good player. Tough, can shoot, fearless. They're deep. Their bench is deep. They have good role players. Ilyasova, Middleton's better than what you want to give him credit for. He made the All-Star team this year. He played great in the playoffs last year against Boston. And of course, they have the MVP of the league, in my opinion, in terms of the Greek Freak. So I think Milwaukee has better parts than what we realize. But I lean towards Toronto because of Kawhi Leonard. I think Kawhi Leonard is that dude. I think Kawhi Leonard right now I think Kawhi Leonard. I'm looking at LeBron's no longer the best player in the world. Let's get that out the way. That's what's being exposed too, is what's going on with the Lakers. And LeBron is just no longer the best player in the world. He's still top five, but he's no longer the best player. Right now, I would say Durant. If I'm ranking them, I would go Durant. It's hard for me to put anybody ahead of Greek Freak. Durant, Greek Freak, Kawhi, Curry, excuse me, and who I put fifth? Probably Harden. Harden. Yeah, I go Harden five. Yeah, I go Harden five. So Durant, Greek Freak, Kawhi, Curry fourth, and Harden fifth. Yeah, those are my top five. Harden over LeBron. It's Harden. So it's LeBron's not even top five right now. LeBron's six. So LeBron, so I think I just knocked LeBron out of the top five players. I mean, listen, at a certain point you're gonna get old. Like age is part of life. At a certain point, father time waits for nobody. And again, LeBron right now is still putting up numbers. He's still he can get a triple double in his sleep. It's not even about that. It's about he can still put up numbers. He can still get up a triple double. It's about how much is he impacting the game. How much is he impact? How much is his impact on the game right now? So as we reconnect here on All right, we're back on YouTube. Had a little glitch there, but we're back. LeBron's impact on the game is nowhere near what it was. Like he can in today's NBA, he can put up numbers. Okay, he can put up numbers, and they can still lose to Phoenix by basically almost by double digits. So it's all about that's the thing about LeBron. It was always about not just his numbers, but about his impacting the game. And one of the reasons why he doesn't impact the game as much is he doesn't guard anybody. He's like a he's a DH at this point in his career. He's above average DH, but he does not guard anybody right now, period. All those guys I put ahead of him, for the most part, are two-way players. So, man, with the exception of Harden, with the exception of Harden. And again, if you want to put Harden below LeBron, I wouldn't have a major problem with that. But Harden's playing better basketball than LeBron James right now. There's no, that's not even up for discussion. So it's going to be a very fascinating postseason in the NBA, especially in the Eastern Conference, and an even more fascinating offseason with the Lakers, and the Boston Celtics. Two of the two most storied franchises in NBA history will have major questions to be answered over the course and made some major decisions to make over the course of the offseason. Of course, one question that we don't have to answer no more, have to answer anymore, is who will Bryce Harper sign with? He is a Philadelphia Philly for presumably the rest of his career. Now, 313 years, $330 million, no deferred money. He wants to be, according to everything he says, he wants to finish his career as a Philadelphia Philly. I think this is one of the rare occasions, as this scarf is sunny, I'm getting a little hot. I think this is one of the rare occasions where everybody won. Everybody. The Nationals, the Phillies, and of course, Bryce Howard. So I'll take the national perspective for a second. If I'm the Nationals, I wouldn't offer him any more than the 10 years, $300 million. That to me was a more than generous offer. $30 million a year, 10 years. That's my cutoff. I have no problem with the Nationals because we've seen what these contracts have done to these franchises with in the past. These contracts have even though there's more money in baseball now than there's ever been. These teams that are signing these guys to these 10-year, $300 million, $280 million contracts, these teams are not, for the most part, not winning championships. This is not. They're struggling to even get to the postseason. So I think the Nationals will be fine. They're going to be centered around their pitching. I'm not worried about the Nationals, to be honest with you. And I can't blame them whatsoever for not giving Bryce Harper 12 years, $350 million or $400 million, anything like that. From a Philly perspective, this is a deal in which you're paying him $25 million a year. It's spread out. He is a franchise player. He is a guy whose best years are ahead of him. He's 26 years old. You're going to get probably 8 to 10 good to great years from Bryce Harper if he can stay healthy. So the only question about Bryce Harper, can he stay on the field? If he can play anywhere from 145 to 155 games a year, this deal, I'm not going to call it a steal, but this deal was absolutely worth it for the franchise. And they still put themselves in a position to where they can get Trout in a couple of years. That is already in play. Mike Trout coming to the Philadelphia, to the Phillies. And again, you're going to have to give Trout $400 million. So that will already be understood. That Trout is going to be the first $400 million baseball player. It will be the highest paid athlete in the history of professional sports, of the four major sports, without question. He'll be free agent at, 28? Yeah, he's going to be the next, Trout's going to break records as far as, being the highest paid player of all time. So I have no – the Philly signed this deal. I think it was necessary. Now, myself – I've been consistent with this. I prefer Manny Machado. Manny Machado has been more durable than Bryce Harper. I think Manny Machado to me would have been my guy to sign. But if you weren't going to get Machado, then Bryce Harper was right there as 1 and 1A. I think Bryce Harper is gifted in terms of natural talent. I think Bryce Harper is as gifted as any player in baseball, including Mike Trout or Manny Machado, in terms of just pure talent. The only question about Bryce Harper, again, is can he stay on the field? If he can stay on the field consistently for 145 to 155 games. He will win multiple MVPs. He will, I think the Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia will embrace him. I think that it is a ideal situation for him in terms of the direction that that team is going in. I think he'll be able to handle being the face of the franchise. We know Philadelphia's a tough town, but I don't see Bryce Harper as this guy who can't handle is sensitive to criticism and or somebody who is going to just melt under the pressure of a big city. I think he's cut out to be in a big city like Philadelphia or New York, and I think he will flourish there personally. I really do. But again, I don't blame Washington for not going harder to re-sign Bryce Harper. They had a couple of other offers that were out there. They said the Dodgers had a short-term offer, 4 years, $180 million, which that's the type of offer that, you know, we really don't want to, because there's no way he's gonna sign a 4-year deal. San Francisco had an interesting offer, 10 years, $310 million, but again, California state taxes. I mean, those state taxes are real. So when you see athletes, you know, a lot of these guys are looking for places with no state tax. Texas, Florida has no state tax. But if you're going to have a state tax, then you got to give me everything I want. Like, if you're going to have a state tax, I need the whole $330 million. Like, it cannot be any question. I have to get every penny, like, imaginable if I'm going to pay a state tax. So, again, I think this is a move where everybody won. that division is going to be rough, brutal. I think the division is going to be very, it's going to be a very tough division, especially at the top. Philly, Washington, the Mets should be better, though it remains to be seen. The Mets should be better. Atlanta, we know how tough, we know how talented and young and talented Atlanta is. So, you know, the NL East will be one of the better divisions in all of baseball, without question. Finally, after months of struggle, after coming off the high of 2018 from a music standpoint, especially with hip hop, we have an album that is worthy of being called a legit album of the year candidate, and that, of course, 2 Chainz album came out Friday. I think it's the best album so far, 2019. 2019 was a struggle up until this point in terms of albums. I heard Offset, you know, decent album, pretty good album, but the 2 Chainz album is a great album. I strongly recommend it. The production, the features, the storytelling. Give LeBron credit for his part of it. He was as an A&R. 2 Chainz wanted him as an A&R. So that says, that speaks to the culture respecting LeBron I'm not giving LeBron artistic music credit. Like, LeBron didn't produce tracks on here. LeBron didn't write tracks. But when the bottom line is, 2 Chainz did call him. So this wasn't like LeBron's trying to jump on 2 Chainz, ride 2 Chainz Coachella into the music business. No. This was 2 Chainz actually called LeBron, and LeBron, to do an A&R, and LeBron accepted. And this album is a tremendous album. It really is. Listen to it multiple times. It's hard hitting from the start. Just from the opening track, I had to replay about 4 or 5 times when I was listening to it. So the first real album, hip hop of 2019. Again, don't be surprised if in November and December we are talking about this as album of the year. Remember last year in terms of best rap album of the year. Remember last year when Nipsey Hussle came out in January. I believe it came out mid January, and we kept waiting for an album to exceed it, to top it. It never happened. That Nipsey Hussle album was the best album, best rap album of the year, without question to me. It was without question was the best rap album of the year. So you can, it is possible that the best rap album of the year comes out this early in the calendar year. Going to end the program with Rillo's rant. Johnny Manziel got kicked out of the CFL for God knows what. I'm sure it has something to do with drugs, lifestyle, the usual Johnny Manziel bullshit. He's going to get another chance. AAF already has expressed an interest in Manziel. He's going to get another chance. But even the words are hard for me right now with Manziel. But you have to be like the biggest fuck up in the world to just waste all the privilege that he has. This guy has... He is the epitome of privilege. He is this guy, you know, grandparents' parents have money. White man, you know, he's white. So he has white privilege going for him. Heisman winning trophy quarterback. And he can't even find his way on a CFL roster. Like, at worst, Johnny Manziel should be a backup NFL quarterback. I never was a Johnny Manziel fan from a football standpoint coming out of college. I wasn't on the hype train. Well, Manziel's going to be the next so-and-so, and he's going, you know, he beat Alabama, so he's going to set the NFL on fire. I never was a part of that. Manziel, but I did think that he would make the league as a backup. I did think he could be a career backup, you know, an effective career backup. And I'm looking at this dude, like, you cannot be a bigger fuck up than Johnny Manziel. It's just not possible. I mean, he is the definition of can't get right. That phrase was coined for Johnny Manziel in mind. It is remarkable how many chances and how many opportunities that this dude has continuously keeps blowing over and over again. And listen, if you're a league like the AAF, yes, you give him a chance because you really have nothing to lose. The league is not dependent on Johnny Manziel. So if somehow, by some miracle, he turns it around, your league ratings and revenue will go through the roof. If he doesn't, then you go on with the rest of your business. He continues to be just the fuck-up that he is. But you just, again, you can't be a bigger fuck-up in sports right now than Johnny Manziel. It's impossible. It really is. This dude is wasting privilege, he's wasting white skin, he's just wasting all of it. He's wasting everything. To get kicked out of the CFL, you get banned out of the entire league. It's pretty hard to do, but possible if you're Johnny Manziel. As always, this is the Real Deal Podcast, telling it like it is, with no apologies. I will see you next time, later on in the week. Thanks for listening.